Blog Talk Radio.
Rising report, it's that Apple report. It's the Rising Apple report. Rising report, it's that Apple report. It's the Rising Apple report.
Yeah! And good Monday evening out there to all the Mets fans listening to the Rising Apple Report. This is Rising Apple staff writer Rich Spirago on the 138th and a very special episode of the Rising Apple Report. And this episode is special because this is the last time you will hear the Rising Apple Report on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be migrating to a different site, and we'll have a lot more information on that coming up shortly. But at this point, I'd like to introduce two of my fellow staff writers at Rising Apple. First, we'll go to the man who, as far as I'm concerned, having these podcasts was his idea right from the very beginning, and that's Sam Maxwell. Sam is a voice well known to the Rising Apple Report, and as I mentioned, the mastermind behind the concept. So, Sam, if my math is correct and my recollection of dates is correct, we began these in January of 2013, so exactly 3.5 years ago. And welcome, first of all, Sam. Good evening.
Thank you, Rich. Yeah, just like you said, that was about 3.5 years ago that we started this. And then with the site editor at the time, Matt Muzico, was also helped get it going, get the foundation sorted. And it's been a hell of a fun ride. I mean, we've had all different types of ups and downs. You know, I remember one point early on, I was late for one particular show, and I was freaking out, and we kind of got, you know, the first screw-up out of the way. And here we are 3.5 years later. We're basically veterans of this process now. And obviously, you know, I couldn't do it without the great support of everybody around me, like yourself, Rich, and the next person you're going to introduce.
Nice segue. Thank you. And that next person will be another voice that is very common to the Rising Apple Report, a gentleman who has hosted on many occasions and certainly participated on many more occasions, and he's just fresh back from a trip to Puerto Rico, literally landed this evening, so he's joining us under a little bit of stress to get on, but he was able to make it, and that's Mr. Mike LeCollin. So, Mike, how are you tonight?
Howdy. Let me tell you first, the weather here today in New York City is like being in the North Pole compared to what I just came from. Oh, my goodness. But I'm well. We went for family reasons. We had a death in the family, but let's not go any further on that because, you know, when we cry, we grieve, we put my aunt to rest, but after that, look, we partied like animals. I'm not going to lie to you. So I'm back, like you said. I'm fresh off the plane. I zoomed home. I scarfed down a peanut butter and jelly sandwich because I was starving. So let's get this rolling.
Sounds good to me, Mike. You know, and speaking about people who are here under duress tonight, I do feel like I have to mention we have an injured Rising Apple reporter now, a Rising Apple report person. And just when we thought only the Mets could go on the DL, well, one of our staff writers and a gentleman on this podcast right now will be going on the DL shortly. So, Sam, why don't you tell everybody what happened and what the prognosis is for you?
Well, after a long night, I was coming home from work early in the morning, and unfortunately, the street gave way under me, and the bike slipped out from underneath me near the Manhattan Bridge, and I was thrown to the ground and broke my collarbone on the left side, the clavicle, as I now, you know, you learn something new every day, and unfortunately, I had to break it to learn what it was exactly called clinically. Like I was telling you off air, Rich, none of us are immune to the Mets injury, orange and blues.
And Sam, I believe it goes a little beyond just, not just, it goes beyond a broken clavicle. I mean, you're actually going to be visiting a place that the Mets have visited quite a bit, which is the operating room, right?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get under the knife. I'm gonna have to have some surgery for this. Unfortunately, I can't tell you exactly. I'll see it tomorrow on the X-rays. I'll see the X-rays myself to tell you exactly what happened to it. But I guess sometimes we're family on here, sometimes we're not. But I'm not gonna go into graphic details. But clearly, the doctors thought that they needed to get in there so it can heal properly. And that's what's going to happen. It's the worst injury I've ever sustained. I've only broken my wrist before, also in a bike accident. And I'm a southpaw, and it always seems to happen to my south side, if you will, the left side of me. And you go through these ups and downs, and you come back out on top and better than ever. So we'll do it just like the Mets have done it, and hopefully we can have a championship on the other end.
Well, thanks for joining tonight, Sam, and obviously best of luck with the procedure and the healing process. And with all that said, so over the first 6 minutes of this podcast, we've talked about the fact that this is the last one on Blog Talk Radio, and it's not the last podcast, it's just the last one on Blog Talk Radio. We will be migrating the Rising Alpha Report to a place called SoundCloud Channel. And we're very honored to have tonight Steve Nasamowitz from SoundCloud Channel. And Steve, I'd like to bring you on and just let you tell everyone who you are, what you do, and tell us a little more about SoundCloud Channel, if you would.
Sure. First off, thank you for having me. Great that we got together and were able to communicate on social media. That turned into this great partnership that we're going to start now. So basically, the channel is on SoundCloud. Just like you guys did, we migrated from another site called Podbean.com over to SoundCloud. I run the S&B podcast show, and me and my friend Dan started that actually the week before Hurricane Sandy. We had our very first episode, just two guys sitting in my room with a laptop and not knowing what we were doing. And so a couple months went by, and a friend started helping us out a little bit, and we started increasing our viewership and the listeners. And over the years, we always like to try and make it better. So we finally looked into SoundCloud, and we have joined SoundCloud now since May, I believe it was, that we started, the first week of May on there. So you can find us on SoundCloud.com at the S&B Podcast channel. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play. We're on Twitter, Instagram at S&B Podcast, and also Facebook at the S&B Podcast channel. We have a couple other shows on with us right now, and we're working on increasing that number of shows. So hopefully we have a lot coming for you within the year, and we're really looking forward to it.
Great, and we are too. And so, Steve, when it comes to your baseball allegiances, I'm going to take a leap of faith that you are, in fact, a Mets fan?
Since 1988.
That's great. So you were there for one of the division championships, which are altogether too rare in Metsville. So Steve, thank you very much for joining us, and we are very much looking forward to moving over to SoundCloud and working with you and expanding this relationship that we have. Very much looking forward to that. So, gentlemen, let's move to the Mets. It usually doesn't take us 8 minutes to get to the Mets, but we had some business to take care of, so here we are. Now, here's where I want to start, and Sam, I'll go to you first on this one, and then maybe we'll go to Steve and then Mike. So Sam, starting with you, the Mets have won two games in a row, which for the defending National League champion should not really seem like a big deal, but it does seem like a big deal. It feels really good because it hasn't happened often enough. It's only happened once since early July. So, but the thing is, the couple games the Mets won, the lineup was back. You know, you had Cespedes, you have Cabrera, you have the addition of Reyes, the addition of Jay Bruce, and finally the team is healthy. Yes, we'll get to Steven Matz later in the podcast, so we'll get to that, the one major injury they are dealing with. But when it comes to finally having the lineup on the field and seeing a couple of games that was the case and they won those couple of games, Sam, what's your reaction? Are you thinking this is a bit of fool's gold, it's too little too late, the team is still dealing with a lot of injuries on the staff, and it, you see a long road ahead, or are you taking a lot of a lot of encouragement from these couple of wins, saying, hey, this is what they can do when they finally have their guys on the field and this thing isn't over. So where's your head right now?
Well, you know, I think you should always be under, unless, you know, it's really, really dire. You should always be under the it ain't over till it's over kind of a mindset. I'm usually the really optimistic one. You know, I don't know whether it has to do with the fact that I broke my clavicle bone or whether it's just generally speaking, there's just been something off about this year. And you could sense it throughout, basically from the get-go, going up against the Royals again. Two games shouldn't mean that big of a deal, but it does, because it's only like the second or third time they've done it since the All-Star break this game. I think something, the other reaction, and I don't really care where we finish right now, if, you know, one way or the other, the number one thing that I really, that screamed about this weekend was Johannes Cespedes. Give this guy a five-year deal. They're not going to not need him in 5 years. And I understand that maybe he won't be the player that he is, that he has been, in 5 years. But I really have faith. I mean, he's just really become my favorite position player of all time in the last only year, since basically just a year and 2 weeks since we've had him as a Met. He is just unbelievable. He's gotten better this year, as you can see with his on-base percentage. And say what you want about the fact that he's kind of playing for a contract in some way, I think that if he wants to be a Met, I mean, it's rare that you find, other than Daniel Murphy, and that's a whole other conversation considering he did want to be a Met, it's nice to find somebody of his star power. And I mean, this guy is a superstar. We lose those two games possibly. I tweeted this morning that if it hadn't been for Johannes Cespedes, we'd be just suspending the game in the 25th inning right now. You know, that's who he is. He is the difference maker. And maybe he can have another ride to help us make the playoffs. But I think that the number one thing for me that came out of this weekend was pay the man.
Well, that's very fair. And you see that the two games they've won, as you indicated, he hit three home runs in those two games. And all three were very important, none more important than the one he hit last night. The two were an absolute bomb that went halfway to Oakland. So, yeah, I mean, the Mets do need him, and it's nice to have him as well as the rest of the team back in the lineup. So, Steve, where are you on this? I mean, do you think, wow, you know, this team could really click on all cylinders? There's still a quarter of the season to go. We have plenty of time. Or are you thinking, you know, maybe the cow's out of the barn on this one?
Well, the way I look at it right now is, like you mentioned, the lineup's healthy, first off. That's the most important thing. This is the first time, minus, you know, David Wright, you're basically getting a healthy lineup. And you threw in Jay Bruce, who, if he gets hot, we know what he can do. We've seen what he can do in his career when he's hot. But also, think back to 1 year ago yesterday on August 21st. Yoenis Cespedes went 5-for-6 with 3 homers and 7 RBIs in Colorado. From that point on, he got very hot, and the team got very hot. Yeah, they were still in the pennant race, so it was big, but now if he starts to take that turn like we've been waiting for all year, and he starts getting hot, other guys are going to start seeing pitches, but he's not going to see them, and other guys are going to get hurt, and I feel like the rest of the team is going to start hitting more. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing a game where you flip-flop Bruce and Cespedes, try and get Bruce something to hit. Maybe he'll get his confidence up a little bit. But as of right now, this is the lineup we're going to be with the rest of the season. And this is what we're going to be seeing. And if they can keep hitting like they have been the past 2 days, then there's really nothing that should be – there's no offense that should be better than them in the National League. The problem really – my mind is the starting pitching, unfortunately, which was, you know, the best thing coming into the season. I mean, I'm probably the only one on this current show who's actually seen Robert Gesselman, who they're bringing up for Steven Matz, pitch in a game. I saw him in Binghamton a year ago. So I'm actually kind of excited to see him pitch in the majors. But as for the lineup, like I said, if this whole lineup is hitting, Reyes leading off and getting on using his speed like he used to, there's really nothing stopping them, in my personal thing. The only guy really would be Travis, who needs to start hitting.
And we should mention how good Reyes has been. I mean, I couldn't believe the line from Friday night when I saw it. And, Mike, here's a little bit of education since you said you've been a little bit out of whack. Reyes went 4-for-4 and didn't score a run. Talk about LOB, huh?
Left on base kills. You have to execute. And, you know, I'd have to expand this in an entirely different conversation because the lack of situational hitting these days, not hitting behind the runner, et cetera, et cetera. Things like that drive me crazy. So that's where my issues are. So I'm not necessarily looking to point my fingers at the Mets for their lack of execution, but I pointed at all of baseball. So, you know, I'm perhaps the wrong guy to ask right now at this time.
And the situational hitting on this team is, I don't think it's ever going to get a lot better when you look at the kind of players that they have. You know, they have sluggers in the lineup. They have guys like Cespedes. He's not going to hit behind a runner necessarily. Bruce certainly isn't going to do it. Neil Walker is a quasi-power hitter. So the construction of this roster simply does not lend itself to small ball, much as I wish it did, because believe me,
maybe I'm really high on Yoan Cespedes now, but I just have a feeling we've seen times this year when there's runners on the corners that he's been able to shorten his swing and go the other way. Like, he's been really smart this year.
He has. No, he has. And now, is the team going to play baseball the way the San Francisco Giants do? You know, which is they hit behind runners. They're basically that fundamentally sound team that lacks power. They're the complete opposite of the Mets. So the Mets will never be them. But right, you hope the guys who can do it will do it, because sitting back and waiting for the long ball, it's not an effective strategy. It's just not. You know, you can't rely on that. Mike, I know you. You're a little bit removed.
I'll finish up, Rich. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No. I was going to you anyway. I was going to say, I know you've been a little bit removed from the news the past couple of days, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it. On you know, are we chasing fool's gold here with the Mets and the couple of wins, or are you thinking that they have something?
Here's the thing. I heard a stat yesterday, and the Mets score 54, 53, you know, I'm in the ballpark at least, of their runs off of home runs. And they lead the major leagues by a wide margin. You know, so what is that? Do or die, swing or miss. You know, hit or miss, excuse me. With regards to Yoan Cespedes, they're a 500 team without him in the lineup. They're above 500 with him in the lineup. I think that speaks for itself. And the thing is, Rich, it's funny. I wrote an article for Rising Apple about playing out the dog days of summer. But you know what the problem was with that was? I wrote that back in May. You know what I mean? So this team can still pull a rabbit out of a hat. They really can. The magic isn't gone. You know, we're still operating with a dynamic duo, and that's a lot more than other teams can say. And what do I mean by that? DeGrom and Thor. So there's still work some there, you know, to their advantage that they can move forward with. You know, a hot streak in September, and you know, we're there, maybe, with any luck. So I'm not looking, you know, to resign myself in 2016 yet. I think they still have a legitimate chance. We've been at this too long to know that, you know, baseball offers many, many, many opportunities over and over and over again. And this may go down to the wire. You know, some teams, they choke, you know, that popularly used word, and other teams, they get hot at the right time, and you never know. You never know.
I got a question for you guys. You talked about home runs. How much of that can you say could be Kevin Long? Like, for example, he was the Yankee hitting coach that year that they moved into the new stadium, and all they did was home runs. Yeah, that's a small part. But now he comes here, and this team is just home run, home run, home run. It's basically home run or bust. And think about the playoff games last year. How many of those games could have went the other way if Daniel Murphy doesn't hit a home run?
I hear exactly what you're saying, but to me this has more to do with Moneyball and the offensive philosophy fostered by Sandy Alderson. Remember, he's, you know, The guy from Oakland. Help me out, guys. I got a brain cramp.
Billy Beane. Billy Beane.
Exactly. He was the student to Sandy Alderson. Sandy Alderson was the one who passed on this knowledge. It was Billy Beane who took it forward, you know, by leaps and bounds. But this is part of the money ball mentality. They don't care about strikeouts. On-base percentage is king, and the home runs are second.
You know, Mike, you raise a good point. And during the broadcast last night on ESPN, they did say something I thought was fascinating. I think the Mets have scored very close to 53% of their runs via the home run ball. And I think the all-time record in baseball for a team's percentage of runs from the home run ball is 55. And I don't remember the team. It was a Blue Jays team, I believe, from the early 2000s. What I think I heard. What's that?
I think you're right, because I caught that stat on ESPN yesterday while I was doing PR.
So that being the case, I mean, the Mets are on the verge of a record. I'm not sure it's a good one, you know. But you're right.
I'm sure it's going to be a Mets record. I mean, does anybody know what the Mets record is?
Perhaps not. Probably setting the record as we speak.
This is where I'll say it would be really, really smart for Sandy Alderson to go a different direction, and this is a different direction I'm talking about. And you mentioned about Terry, Rich, you're done with them, and I think you and I have been done with them since we started this podcast. But, you know, go with Wally Backman, man. I mean, maybe Wally Backman is now so just doesn't want to mess up, you know, now he's gone completely onto the other side of things. But that's what it seems Terry's done, and it's been a detriment, I think. I think if he had actually found some middle ground with being a player manager, then we would have actually had something here. But unfortunately, he's just been too by the book, and it's just been there's no gut ever, really, it doesn't really seem. Because it always, you know, like something like Matt Harvey and Yuris Familia a few weeks ago, when he wasn't supposed to be available, he is listening to the players too much now. But the thing with Wally, you know, Wally's going to want somebody running first. You know, he's going to be pushing the envelope. It doesn't. There's speed with some of these guys, but they're just staying put. They don't want to pull a hammy or something anymore. And that's what's so important about having Reyes back and hopefully healthy. So he's looking like he's getting his legs under him. And Jose Reyes, since they're depending on him for next year to be the leadoff hitter, would just benefit from somebody like Wally. And think about it from a PR perspective, too. Just how much the fan base would be behind this right now. You need somebody to understand what it takes to win, and he hasn't been given the chance yet, even though he's performed at every single level, except for one double-A year when he had Matt Harvey under him. So I think that it's time. And I think that there's a lot of scenarios that might happen, and I don't even know if Sandy Alderson's going to be here next year, let alone Terry Collins. Terry Collins might also say to himself, you know what, I'll just take the buyout because I don't want to travel like this anymore. I'm getting old. There's a lot of different scenarios that could happen here. And the reason with Sandy Alderson, I don't think he actually might, you know, pass down the baton because, you know, I think he's dealing with some health issues. And I don't know, every time you guys see him, every time I see him, he doesn't look all that well. I don't know about you guys, but you know, go ahead.
I'm actually like 100% convinced that during the last homestand, if they got swept by the Padres, Terry Collins wasn't making the trip to the West Coast because I figured that the Wilpons, I don't think the Wilpons are a fan of Wally Backman for whatever reason. So I kind of thought it would be, if they got swept, they would have to make a change. So they were going to the West Coast anyway, so you just pick up Wally Backman when you're over there, and you give him a shot. You know, if he sparks the team, good, great, wonderful, then you can at least interview him during the offseason. If the team just thuds out and completely fails under him, then you could say, hey, we gave him a shot, and now Wally get lost. You had your chance, you blew it.
I'd love to jump in on that one, and this is not to say you're right or wrong, because really, who knows? This is just what I think. I think Fred, you know, he's been down that road before. He's dealt with controversy throughout his career with the Mets. It's not Fred. I think Fred is a fan, especially of those 80s Mets, and he's not afraid to take that on now. He might be, you know, getting on in years. I think the roadblock, the impediment to that is Jeff. Jeff is the one who doesn't want to hear.
Jeff is the paranoid one, and he's the one who avoids
controversy at all costs.
But Jeff hired him. I mean, maybe Fred was behind it, but Jeff was, I thought, instrumental in saying, all right, we're going to give you another chance. I mean, maybe he's, kind of just one of those things where he's just being a douchebag, and now Wally owes him or whatever. But I always thought both were behind. But I know considering that Daryl Strawberry did have that stuff to say about how Jeff's always like viewed the '86 team in a bad way.
So we've been talking about Terry, and I know Steve, we're going to lose you shortly. So I'll set this up and then go to you first. The reason I'm done with Terry has a lot to do with the decisions he makes during the game. To me, what we're talking about now, the home run philosophy versus small ball and all that, that's organizational. I actually think that is over his head. They haven't given him the players to necessarily be able to play small ball, and I don't agree with the organizational philosophy, but I do think that one might be out of his hands. But what is in his hands are some of the decisions he makes during the games. I want to go to one last night. So last night, Syndergaard was in the high 90s in pitches, I think 98, through eight innings, and he was dominating. Terry said after the game that his inclination was to leave Syndergaard in the game, and Syndergaard basically said, you know what, I'm tired, I don't want to be the hero, we need to win this ball game, take me out. So that being the case, here's what I want to talk about. When Terry left Matt Harvey in the ninth inning of ill-fated Game 5 of the World Series, he said 3 days later at his press conference when they gave him a contract extension that he will learn from that, and he will not push these guys, and he knows he has a closer, and he will not let the players make decisions and all that. Well, what happened last night? Here's a player who made the decision, and Terry's about to make the wrong one, and in this case had to be talked out of the wrong decision by the player. So what I'm saying is, this is a guy who, to me, should be on the hot seat for lack of leadership more than anything else, time and time again. Now, Sam, you were saying earlier, you referenced the Familia episode from a few weeks ago, where I believe it was in the Colorado series, where Familia had thrown, I think it was 104 pitches over 5 days. Basically, that's a start, right? 104 pitches over 5 days. And Terry said, I'm not using them. Familia talked his way into that Thursday afternoon game against Colorado and coughed up the save in the ninth inning. So it's Harvey in the World Series. It's Familia against Colorado. It's making another bad decision last night with Syndergaard, or potentially making a bad decision, and having to have the player talk him out of that. I think Terry is not a leader, and I think it's their example after example. So, Steve, what are your thoughts on it? When you see Terry, is he a leader among men, and is he the right guy for this job or not?
Wait, we're not allowed to curse on this show, right?
Sure you are.
I could call him every name in the book, because I have since he's been here. My opinion is that Terry Collins was the perfect guy when he came into the job. We had a young team. We were starting a rebuild. He was good with young players, and I understood it. Like, I got it. But going into this year, we took a step after last year. It was time for the team to take that next step, and Collins isn't the guy to lead the next step. If the Mets want to hire Collins as an assistant again and say, hey, go retire to Florida and hang out with the St. Lucie Mets, go for it. Have a good time. Teach those guys what you know.
Yes.
Fine.
Yes.
But if these guys are now professional players, they need a professional manager. And I honestly think that I know they gave him the extension, and I'm also big on not letting coaches go into years with only 1 year, because I think it actually affects their mindsets. So I understood the extension, but I think it's time that Terry walks or either retires, or either they do one of those quote-unquote retires, like where he says he's retiring, but really they're just paying him money to go away, or they fire him. It's got to be done.
I don't disagree with the word you said. I think that Terry was the right guy at the time. Like you said, they were rebuilding. They weren't going to win anything for the first couple of years. And having a puppet in the dugout to implement the organizational philosophy, fine, no big deal. But now when you're playing games that matter, and you can have an organizational philosophy all you want. Decisions need to be made during the ball games. And you see this guy, like the whole thing with Jim Henderson earlier in the season when the fans knew this guy with two arm surgeries, you cannot put him back out there. He puts him back out there a third day in a row. I mean, when the entire fan base could see something before it happens and say, don't do that, he does it, and it's not a one-off. To me, this guy's tenure's over, man. You know, he's not the guy to bring it to the promised land. Now, Steve, thank you for that. And I know it is 10 o'clock straight up, and I know you mentioned you had to leave us at 10. So I'll give you a chance one more time to just tell us about SoundCloud and where they could find it, and we'll go from there.
All righty. So on SoundCloud, just search for us, the SMB Podcast channel. You can find the Weissman and Oz show on our channel as well. The SMB Podcast show, which I'm a part of. My co-host is my good friend Vin Santangelo. Also, we have on our good friend Dan Behan comes on. He's actually one of the founders with me. That's the D in the SMB Podcast, Dan. We also have Jay's Week in Wrestling. If you're into wrestling, he talks about all of wrestling, UFC, NXT, all of it. That's on every week. But we can be found on iTunes, Google Play, and all other podcast applications. The only thing we really ask of you besides listening is to rate our show on iTunes. When you go to subscribe, they give you a reviews page. If you just click on that and just rate us, give us a high rating. You can curse at us and yell at us and complain that we do a horrible job in the comments. We don't care about that as long as you give us a lot, 5 stars. So we would appreciate that. You could also find us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And that's about it for now.
Great, Steve. Thank you for coming on. Really appreciate it. And looking
Thanks,
forward
Steve.
To working.
Thank you for having me, guys. Thank you for having me. Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to having you guys be a part of our channel. And we will definitely be in touch soon to get that started.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great night.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
So, Sam, I think you've been on the Terry Has to Go bandwagon a little bit longer. You might be the guy actually driving the bandwagon. I think I jumped on with you. So I'm going to do one of my favorite things. I'm going to turn this over to Sam Maxwell for a couple of minutes. And, Sam, tell us your thoughts on Terry and why he maybe might not be the right guy for the job.
Well, you know, Rich, I think you've pretty much covered every single perfect example. I mean, I remember, like, complaining about him in my mom's upstate house in 2013 against the Florida Marlins. I think it had to do with like Matt Harvey and being at like 100 and something pitches, and he should have taken him out like one more incident earlier or something. I don't know. It's just, we've been talking about this forever. And like you said, his tenure is over. It's clearly over. Now, obviously, we're going to all sit back and see what the 2016 Mets can do. Terry's legacy hasn't necessarily been written yet. But I just have this feeling that not that his heart isn't necessarily in it, because I think, you know, he's a baseball lifer. Like, he wants to have as much fun as we had last year, and he wants us to have as much fun as we had. But he's a crockpot sometimes with this thought process. I think, going back to what Steve said about, like, Wally Backman just picking him up, I just think that's a hard transition mid-year anyway, and I don't think that would happen. I think this would definitely be a off-season decision about what to do with Wally. I think the thing about Wally is that you have these kids coming up now. Next year, you're probably going to start seeing those seeds start blossoming. And what better person to be there for him than the person who's been helping them get to this level. And I think it's time. I mean, Wally Backman does not want to just be a AAA manager helping the Mets farm system blossom. He definitely wants the major league job, and he's an organizational guy, and I think they've been, you know, brewing it for this particular moment. If Terry Collins, for some reason, were to get fired mid-year, obviously I think Tim Tuffle or just even the bench coach just segues over, because you want to have some sort of, generally speaking, I mean, can you guys think of an example of any time they just call the manager up?
I don't know. I'm sure George Steinbrenner tried doing it, but I don't know.
I think it's
you mean
probably
just like it's just Bobby from Scranton Wilkes Barre?
But Well, you know, I think your points are well taken, Sam. And I think it's – and Mike, I'm going to go to you next on this, of course. But Steve, Sam, and I all seem to think that, you know, Terry's time is up. You know, it's just not happening. There's something missing with the team. The team had a lot of talent when it was at full strength earlier in the year, and it wasn't, you know, playing to the degree it should have. And I don't know. And when you think about his in-game decisions, and to me, again, more than any of that, is the continued examples of lack of leadership. I just don't see how this guy being in the manager's chair gets this team over the hump to a world championship. Mike, where are you on this?
I'm right there with you guys. Steve said it well. You said it well. Sam said it well. It's playing for Papa Smurf, you know. Terry Collins is wishy-washy. And indecisive is as indecisive does. That's it.
I mean, I didn't watch the Smurfs too much, but I bet you Papa Smurf is a lot more decisive than this.
Perhaps. You know, there's a point in that.
I'm not well-versed on the narrative of the Smurf show.
You know?
All I know is Papa Smurf was purple, right? Like dark
no,
blue.
Blue,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, guys, all right, we've covered Cespedes. We've talked about Terry Collins, which we always do. We've talked about, you know, is it fool's gold with the Mets, or are they really showing something? And since this is the last episode of the Rising Opera Report on Blog Talk Radio, we wouldn't be complete without bringing on our all-time favorite caller who has now gone into the queue. And I know he's DM'd me a few times over the past few weeks saying that he has a lot to say in the next episode of the Rising Opera Report. So, with no further ado, I'd like to bring in the young man we have dubbed Long Island Mike. Long Island Mike, how are you tonight?
Very good. How are you?
We're good, good. So, Mike, you have told us you had some things you want to say, so go. Just go. What do you want to say?
Okay, well, Terry Collins sucks. He needs to be fired immediately. Call Wally Backman or something, because I'm tired of Terry. He's a real, I can't say that word on air. But I think you know what I'm hinting at. But, yeah, I just don't like Terry at all. His lineups are stupid. Why would you put Cespedes in front of Bruce? That makes no sense whatsoever with Bruce being cold right now. But I do approve the Bruce deal. Sandy did a good job there because Dulson Herrera sucked. This offense sucks. Steven, very good try. No hitter. I was at that game. Too bad he lost it. I can keep ranting a little bit. Jay Bruce needs to get his act together. This team is not a playoff team. We are not making to the playoffs. We are complete trash this year. Oh, and one last thing. If the Mets let Cespedes walk due to financial reasons, trust me, I'm going to be rioting that team next year.
All right, well, that was a very concise way to get your thoughts across. I like that. Gentlemen, as in Mike LeColin and Sam, we can move to another topic here, and certainly we'll have Long Island Mike chime in as well. You know, you touched on something, Mike, Long Island Mike, that actually was a topic of debate in my house last night, which is what the lineup should be. And so, Sam, I'll go to you on this one. You have – let's assume it's going to be Reyes obviously leading off. Batting second, mostly Grandy, because you're going to face more right-handed pitching than anything else, and Grandy plays against the righties. So, and I'm okay with that, actually. I think with Reyes on base, Grandy, who is a dead fastball hitter, will get more of them. So I'm okay with Reyes-Grandy. But what would you do with the combination of Cespedes, Bruce, and Walker, Sam? How would you align them?
I think you got to go Bruce, Cespedes, Walker.
Like that.
I think you're right. You got to start protecting Bruce. Although Walker obviously is pretty hot right now. Still, I just think that, I don't know. You don't have a three hitter right now. That's the bottom line. You don't have a three hitter right now. So, you know, Darnell, if he were hitting, would make this so much more of a dynamic to figure out maybe he could be your three hitter. And then you'd have Travis Darnell as your three-hitter.
Bruce 4, Suspenders 5, Walker 6. And you want a lot of people on for Suspenders, wouldn't you think? So having him at 5 is kind of powerful, especially if you can have, if Walker's hot, right, you know, at that moment. And then that's Struble Cabrera, 7. And I guess, and then, you know, Conforto it's unbelievable, the dive that Conforto's taking right now.
Can I chime in on Conforto real quick?
Sure.
Well, Conforto sucks. He's the next Eric Campbell. He can only hit in AAA and not the MLB. That simple. That's how I've been putting it to everyone. And it's not proving it to me.
All right.
What do you see, Mike, that makes you think Michael Conforto will not be able to get it together here?
Everyone loves the swing. I know. I hate it. He drops his back shoulder every time. He's just going to be a pop-up guy. He's not going to be successful, man. It'll be Brandon Nimmo has a better opportunity than Conforto.
Well, the thing with Conforto is, and I say this ad nauseum, is that Conforto is a gap-to-gap hitter, line drive gap-to-gap hitter, and he needs to get back to that. That's what got him to skip AAA. Not yanking some home runs, which I think it's pretty obvious. That's what he's become obsessed with. I do think he has a very bright future. And you will see him again, obviously, in, what's today, the 22nd. You'll see him again in 9 days or 10 days. And you have to remember, this kid is, what, 23 years old. So, you know, he does have a long way ahead of him. Sam, you like the idea of Cespedes at fifth, which is something that, you know, that's a unique way of looking at it. I understand your point. I understand your point that if he's batting fifth, there might be more people on in front of him. He's protecting Bruce a little bit, maybe protecting Walker as well. So I think there's something to that, you know, to get him up with the most runners possible on base, because goodness knows that's something the Mets need to do a little better job of. But so
yeah, right now that would only work if you had a three hitter, and you don't.
Right. And in this particular lineup, I don't know, you could go Walker or Bruce third if you had to. I mean, I see the point with Bruce batting third, because that is going to force them to pitch to him, and because Cespedes is behind him. And so that might get him out of his slump. I do see that point. But you're right. The Mets don't have that Keith Hernandez third hitter, the guy who line drive, contact hitter, 300 hitter. Yes, we hope it's Conforto. It hasn't been yet, but that doesn't mean it won't be. He will
Daniel
fill that.
Murphy.
Yeah, Daniel Murphy. Who's that? I forgot. Who's that guy? But
and hey, that is a whole other topic to talk about in terms of the dynamic of the 2016 season. And, you know, I don't know if you want to go that route right now, Rich.
No, I don't. I don't want to talk about Murphy because it annoys me. He's having a good year and all of that, but, you know, none of us knew, and I'll defend Sandy on this one. I'm 50-50 on Sandy, and this is one where I agree with him. None of us knew he was going to do this. It's not sustainable. He'll have his career year, and he'll be back to making errors and hitting 290 with a 300 on base percentage last year. I firmly believe that.
I have some things to – I'll say this, and then we'll leave it with Daniel Murphy. I do think we can move on. But I guarantee you that had Daniel Murphy been on this team, he wouldn't be having the year that he's having, but he might be having his best season as a Met, and we would not have this problem with runners in scoring position. Or make that, like, just in general, just because of that, him alone would have catapulted the numbers up, because he never really suffered with that.
And, you know, Keith Hernandez always said, he always said that Murphy was the best three-hitter they had. And yeah, you know, the power is the thing that we don't know where it's coming from. You know, it started last year in the postseason. I don't know how a 29-year-old guy develops power all of a sudden, and no, I don't think he's having any artificial help. It's one of those things. It's just a lightning bolt that of all the players in Major League Baseball – at 29, this guy's power goes up exponentially. It happens, and it might be lucky.
I always knew that he was a smart hitter, and unfortunately, it just never really came together to be what we thought he could be, which is, you know, a 320 hit. And that's probably what he's going to level out to on this new chapter of his. But it's just, it says a lot about loyalty. I mean, you might be missing a big chunk of the heart of the team without Daniel Murphy. And that might be an element you can't really measure, but just some things I've been thinking about over the last few weeks as we kind of tailed off in that divisional race, especially.
Okay, I'm
sure, understood. Mike LeColin, you've been quiet on this one. Middle of the order, how would you arrange it?
I would opt to maximize, if you're going to maximize Cespedes, you have to hit Bruce behind him. That's my gig. That's your bread and butter. Cespedes is your bread and butter, so you got to protect him. And if you're going to maximize him, you got to put Bruce behind him.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know,
because
I don't know. Maybe you put Loney, if in my Cespedes, magically we have a three-hitter named Travis Darno. And you have Cespedes 5, you have Loney 6, Walker 7. I mean, you might actually have, and then I guess, what was Cabrera 8? You know, you have some protection there.
Travis Darno is a Las Vegas character.
I'm kind of mad at Darno myself, I have to say. And when I watch Rene Rivera, I say to myself, at least he could do one thing. You know, he could throw people out. But it's too – one thing I try to hold on to here is it's too early to give up on Darno. What is he, 25, 26?
Do you see Gary Sanchez from the Yankees? He just hit another home run. And what, he's in his third week in the MLB and he has like 8 home runs already?
Well, true.
So did Conforto. Conforto got hot. Now you're not high on him now. So now you're like, you know, don't be a hypocrite.
Right. 3 weeks from now, Gary Sanchez could be hitting 150. I mean, you know, we tend to, and we all do it. You know, it's no one person. We all do it. But we all thin slice information, and we try to make assumptions on a very thin slice. When you think about the baseball season's long, most careers are long, you know, you have to look at bodies of work. And but, yeah, I mean, damn, as a fan, I'm not happy with Darno at all. And I do think sending Conforto down was the right move. I do think he'll be a very good player. He has to get his poop together in AAA. You know, we can't afford that in the major league level. So, all right, so moving on to some other Mets business. Something a little more tangible as opposed to theoretical about the lineup, something a little more tangible and a little bad is Steven Matz. So, well, I'm not sure how bad it is. So he went to New York today, and he had his MRI, and he was nothing structural. We've heard that before, right? Nothing structural.
Yeah.
And some shoulder stiffness, but he is on the DL. So I have two questions for you guys. And Sam, I'll start with you, then we'll go to Mike L., then Long Island Mike. So, Sam, how concerned are you about Matz is the first question I'll ask all you guys. And then the second question is, he's on the 15-day DL. Given the precarious nature of the Mets season right now, would you consider shutting him down for the year, or would you try to bring him back? So both questions, Sam, go.
I'm concerned, but I also think, and I'm hoping that Noah Syndergaard keeps proving me right, these guys have to figure out a way to pitch through all of this. I think it's been too much in their head. And last night, I think we finally saw it's just completely out of Syndergaard's head. We've gotten to the point that everybody's too worried their arm's going to pop at any second because then there goes their money and they're going to be back to eventually selling cars back in their hometown or something. Like, people got to pitch. You got to pitch, and you got to keep pitching. And I hope, obviously, like, you never know. Obviously, all of a sudden I can be on the DL. And I'd had a pretty good run for a while. But at the same time, you just got to pitch, and you got to stop worrying about this stuff because it's going to happen eventually. So, just you know, something seems to be different now, and we can't put our finger on it. But it's just when you look at it, the way it's been, That's the only thing I can think of. It's been part psychological, part physical. They've been blowing them out too early, and then they tighten up late once they get to the professional leagues, and it's just completely uneven. The arm doesn't know what to do. So I think human beings need to, in baseball, need to think about what kind of program you really want to do over the course of a career. That's kind of a mixture of the traditional and also, you know, obviously with all the different things we now know about a pitching arm. I think they need to come up with something. And it's unbelievable how, like, we're such a focus of the paranoia in baseball with our young pitchers. This Mets team, you know, I just think that Matt has to pitch. He has to figure out a way to pitch through this because, you know, he's been going through this stuff too much over the course of his career. And if he's going to have any type of career not just, you know, like we have so many, you know, a few game legends, he needs to figure out how to stay healthy.
So I'm going to assume that you're not in favor of shutting him down. Let him get through. Let him get his couple of starts off.
No, that's right. Exactly. I want them to pitch.
Okay, and that's fair. And it, goodness knows it's been talked about. I mean, Terry's talked about having to pitch through pain, pitch when it's, you don't have your best stuff and all of that. So, Mike L., what are your thoughts? I mean, are you concerned about Matt's? I mean, shoulders are never good, and he's had some arm issues in the past, and would you consider shutting him down, or what's your thought?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. The foot bone is connected to the ankle bone. You know what I mean? Look, he already had bone spurs in his elbow. So you make an adjustment. You compensate. Oh, and lo and behold, he has shoulder stiffness. It's progressive, you know what I mean? Now he's going to make another adjustment, or he's going to follow a wellness regimen, and then what? So that's my answer.
So would you consider shutting him down?
I'd have to, you know, monitor very closely where his arm tells us he should land or not land. You know, the proof is in the pudding. So if he doesn't respond well, he has to go. If he responds well, you let him continue pitching. I think it's actually kind of clear cut. His arm will tell us all. His velocity, you know, when he throws on the side, they'll have to figure that out. They'll have to make that decision. And if it involves shut him down, then shut him down. I don't know about this pitching through pain and, you know, afraid of not making your money. I don't know. I'm not saying you're wrong or right. I don't know. That's not where my head was at. This is where my head is at. The foot bone is connected to the ankle bone. He had problem A, he compensated, and now he has problem B.
Could be. And I think, you know, your course of action is the one that they will take, you know, which is it's a wait-and-see approach. You know, so he's now had, I think, 6 inactive days because they backdated him till Tuesday, so he has 9 more. And let's say he throws 5 or 6 days from now, and if his shoulder's okay, they bring him off the DL and give him a start. But if his body isn't responding to that, to the rest and the treatments and all of that, then you might see a longer DL stint, which, you know, if it gets too long, it might just be season-ending. But let's not go there yet. Hopefully he will respond because I think the kid's dynamic on the mound, and I've always liked him. So Long Island Mike, speaking of Long Island, because that's where Matt is from, how would you handle them? Are you concerned, and how would you handle the Matt thing?
He reminded me of Steven Strasburg, who just won the DL today, too. He gets injured a lot, but he can become a great pitcher. Right now, with his shoulder stiffness, it's a tough call, but I say shut him down. Because this Mets team isn't making it anywhere this year with all the injuries. Shut him down, shut Noah down, shut everyone down, start our freshman next year. We're going to be the Giants again, and we're good in the even years. What are we now, 500 as a team? We're not going anywhere against anyone. You might as well just shut everyone down, even Noah. Because Noah even said last night after the 8th inning to Terry, I want to come out of the game. And Terry wanted him to pitch tonight because he was tired. That's a sign that his arm is fatiguing. And start off fresh for next year and just blow the season away. We have no chance. We may only be 3.5 games out of the wild card or 4.5, whatever it is. But we're not going to, even if we do make the postseason, we're not going to beat the Dodgers, who are healthy. We're not going to beat someone else. We're not going to beat the Nationals. There's just no point.
All right. Well, you know, that's a realistic, I guess, slash, you know, somewhat pessimistic view. But, okay, you're entitled to that. And so, but that's okay. That, you know, I think as Mets fans, a lot of us are inherently negative. Some are positive, you know, but a lot of Mets fans, I think, Mike, you speak for a lot of Mets fans there with the doom and gloom kind of outlook. But that's just the way we've been conditioned. So, guys, I want to move to another topic here. I'm going to start with Mike L. Because this one involves older-time Met fans. So we'll go to Mike L., then Sam, then Long Island Mike on this one. And it's a bit of unfortunate news that we should discuss, and that's about Dwight Gooden. Doc has been in the news quite a bit, just kind of summarizing the recent events. He was supposed to be at an event with Strawberry last week. I believe it was last Thursday. He did not show up, and then nobody heard from him for a few days. And then Daryl came out and said he's very concerned about Doc, and you know, Doc is an addict, and what addicts do is they, you know, kind of lie and cheat their way through life and all of that. And he said he's very concerned, and he has to speak up because no one else is, and that kind of thing. And then I believe it was Doc's ex-girlfriend, I think, spoke today and said Doc – or yesterday and said Doc's an addict. That's what he is, and none of this is surprising because that's the kind of path he's been going down for a very long time. And then just today – Doc himself spoke. He surfaced and he spoke and he said, yes, he's an addict, but he said that he has not relapsed and that's not the reason for his erratic behavior. So, you know, that's tough for me, Mike, because I'm a huge Doc Gooden fan. I mean, I remember when he came up in 1984 and especially his dominant year of 85, watching that high leg kick and that. I've never seen a pitcher dominate like him. Thor is close when Thor is on. Harvey a little farther away from Doc when he was on. Nobody that I've ever seen has been Doc for those 2 years. And I had a chance to meet him at Citi Field a couple years ago. And, you know, he seemed personable and all that stuff. And when I hear that he just can't control his life and his addiction, it's very sad. And I worry about the guy. So, Mike LeCollin, what are your thoughts?
I met him as well at MCU Park at a Cyclones game. You know, in reference to Doc, there's something to be said for still being in denial. Doc insists he's healthy, and that's his main point. You know, so he's still shadowboxing the real issue at hand. You know, and with regard to Strawberry, intervention. If Doc can't take it upon himself to straighten himself out, and if Strawberry is willing to intercede and try to help something out, they're not exactly the greatest of friends, but as someone who perhaps understands what he might be going through, and if he's willing to take it upon himself, you know what they say, the old saying, you know, friends don't let friends, blah, blah, blah. So take help at face value, but Doc first has to be willing to receive. He needs to open his mind to help. And if he's making, no, I'm healthy. I mean, people are calling him a drug addict, and in the same sentence making reference to his state of health because of the way he looks, well, he only addresses, no, I'm healthy. All right, but what about the other issue? You see, so he's shadowboxing it. And if Daryl wants to take it upon himself, you know, to enact an intervention, be it solo or if he's going to get other people involved and, you know, draw more attention to this for Gooden's sake, I guess that's okay. Because if you didn't care about him, then you would just let him waste away and die. So perhaps there are still people who care about him very, very much, and they feel it's about time for an intervention. When you don't care about anybody, you just let them, you know, disintegrate and die. And that would be sad. So if there's still time to help,
That would be good.
Well, I think you're right on that. You know, I think Doc is at the point now, and I'm not an addiction specialist, but it would seem to me that Doc's at the point where he needs to be pushed. And if it's Daryl who does it, that's great. If it's somebody from Doc's family or something like that, that's great. But I just don't know that this pattern can go on without something bad happening to him.
It's reckless. You're absolutely right about that. Doom is just around the corner.
Right. That's right. And, you know, he's been in and out of rehab so many times, arrested a few times, and it's time, dude. You know, and again, if it's, like you said, if his family loves him or Daryl loves him or whoever loves him enough to say, it's over, man. You know, you're going to rehab now, and you're staying there. You're not staying there 28 days. You're staying there a long time. Until you're ready to come out and deal with this. And somebody's got to do it because, you know, if you saw the thing on Doc and Daryl, I think a lot of us did. It was on last month on ESPN, the 30-30-30 thing. You know, there was that guy who was the addiction counselor who was on there. And I remember what he said. He goes, you know, I had Doc in rehab. And he said, the one thing is everybody kisses his ass because he's Doc Gooden. He goes, I don't. I'm a former addict myself. And I treat him like anybody else. And I say, you know what you are, buddy? You're nothing but a drug addict at this point. Who cares if you were a baseball player or whatever you were? You are a drug addict. You are not a baseball player anymore. And he said that's what's going to get Doc into rehab and get him to stay there and get him to straighten himself out is when people like us on this podcast, you know, stop kissing his ass. And it was an interesting point. So, Sam, what are your thoughts on it?
Did you guys see the photo that the Daily News had of him?
I did not.
At his apartment door?
I didn't.
Well, I mean, I don't know how he could say he's healthy based off of the look of him. He doesn't look even close to healthy. He looks very frail. Why that is? I'll tell you what, Daryl Strawberry has nothing to gain. He's not trying to gain publicity. This is the way he's trying to intervene. And he thought if he puts it out to millions of people, unfortunately, it doesn't sound like Dwight responded properly because apparently he said he doesn't want. He's like, I'm done with Daryl because I can't believe he did that. So, I think that it's very unfortunate, you know, to see somebody in that condition. And, you know, you're talking about a lot of people can be addicted to prescription medicine, and it sounds like Dwight has at certain points because that was an issue at some point. But, you know, that stuff is kind of part in some ways of the hypocrisy of this entire nation and the way they view all different types of substances. But, you know, something like cocaine, Dwight is a perfect example of why it should be illegal. And it is illegal. And he says that he's not relapsing, but he sure looks like it. Because generally speaking, somebody, especially an athletic type like him, wouldn't look like that even at age of 40-something if he weren't doing something to drastically alter his weight back, going back and forth. I mean, think about it like this. Matthew Perry, if anybody out there has watched Friends, said that he was generally on coke for the entire, like, first... I don't know exactly, you know, I don't know, have all the information, but it was generally, you know, the first 3 to 5 years or whatever. And if you were watching the show, you kind of did see his weight go back and forth and back and forth. You know, that's just what happens. And so Doc can deny it all he wants, but between, you know, what happened with Daryl coming out and saying something and the way he looks, I mean, what does he want us to really believe? It's just the logic and reason are not pointing to that. And hopefully I don't know what I can say that what he needs to do. He just needs a completely different mindset. And that's like you said, you're going to be in there for more than 28 days. You got to think differently, because if he were thinking differently, he wouldn't have responded about Darryl like that. And, you know, it's very unfortunate, and hopefully he can see the light at some point and get off everything.
Well said. Well said. Long Island Mike, thoughts on that?
I actually have something to say with that about the law. I'm a huge supporter of the United States Constitution and just the laws in general. He should be arrested for openly admitting he's a drug addict and he does drugs these days. That is illegal. That is a felony. He should be arrested. I don't care if he's a baseball player. He should be arrested and then forced into rehab with the judge, whatever the judge says. A year in jail or a year in rehab, up to you.
But,
they can't
just arrest him for saying that. I mean, you know, obviously, I guess.
Yeah, they need to catch him in the hat, but that's kind of simple.
Somebody could drug test him, but, you know, they basically, to arrest somebody, they need to, you need to be in possession of it or do
yeah,
it,
they
you
need
know,
to be caught,
be caught
in, the
in the act of it. And
we'll
just saying
have
that
one
you're
of
a drug
friends
addict.
Go over to the house.
And especially
and
considering that he said he's a drug addict because they also consider themselves addicts forever. You know, they're recovering addicts, but they're still addicts. Darryl Strawberry said the same thing today. And so when Doc says that, he hasn't relapsed. But, you know, one way or the other, he's calling himself a drug addict and saying he hasn't relapsed. So there's no actual evidence that he has other than if you drug test him. But the cops can't just knock on somebody's door.
Yeah, they would need a warrant.
It's not even that. Johnny Cochran said it best. There's the law, and there's how the law works.
Darryl should just stay out of it because he did some bad stuff in the clubhouse, too, that I'm sorry, I'm not I'm allowed to say
no,
answer.
No, but that's
I'm
the,
not.
But he has recovery centers now. Darryl Strawberry does this for a living. He's a minister, and he also does this for a living, is get people better and off drugs. So Darryl Strawberry butting into it is what he does. That's the appropriate thing to do because he loves Dwight, and as you know, we love him on a completely different level than the people who have known him over the years do. And the thing that we know, if you know anything about the story, the worst part about it all is that this kid should have. It doesn't make sense that he would go down this road because he was such a good kid, and it's just very unfortunate. But I just completely disagree with the idea that just because of the type of person Darryl Strawberry was 30 years ago doesn't give him. I think it gives him more say considering he doesn't do that anymore and understands that and has gotten past that, unlike it would seem Doc.
And if not Darryl Strawberry, then who? There can only be one person that can do that, and that's the Willing.
Sad thing. And I tend to agree that if it's Strawberry who has to step up and be the one that, you know, as the kids say today, puts him on blast and, you know, make sure everybody knows and somebody steps up and finally wrestles this guy into a rehab for his own good, then so be it. You know, if that's what it's going to take, then that's fine. And whether it's Darryl or somebody else. But something has to be done because I think we all know anecdotal stories of erratic behavior from Doc over the years. And sure, is that enough to convict somebody and say, you know, you're a drug addict? No, but it certainly is a sign of it. And when you couple with everything else, the way he looks, you know, you put all this circumstantial evidence together, it kind of looks like the guy has a pretty serious problem and, you know, and is in the process of self-destruction. And hopefully somebody really, really has enough love for the guy to just, you know, physically drag his ass into a rehab. And I really hope that happens. So now we need to go to two last pieces of business here. I'll call it two. They're really, the first one has two parts. So this is episode number 138 of the Rising Alpha Report. And this is a two-part exercise. I'll turn to Sam for a little walkthrough. Mike, you can certainly jump in. I know you two guys kind of partner on this. A little walkthrough of National League Baseball in 1938. So, Sam, take it away.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm getting the material together now, but we're going to start with the 1938 Dodgers, who it's a very important year in Dodgers history because they brought on Larry McPhail, number one, who was a great executive, team president, and basically was helped turn around that entire franchise, make them profitable, and get them back to the World Series by 1941, which is a little spoiler alert. 1938 was also the first year that Leo DeRocher, who would become a figure not only in New York National League history, but you know, of pre-New York Mets, but was an opponent against the Mets in 1969 against the Chicago as a manager of the Chicago Cubs. So in 1938, the Brooklyn Dodgers, they still finished in the general. Oh, wait a second. I'm sorry. I totally. I don't know what I was thinking, and I'm sure Mike wanted to. What they did in 1938, Burley Grimes was still around, and but they did trade for Leo DeRocher. Prior to bringing Larry McPhail on, they traded for Leo DeRocher to become the shortstop from the Cardinals. And I'm ashamed that I went down this road without completely forgetting that Burley Grimes was still around. Burley Grimes had been a pitcher for the Brooklyn Dodgers and then was a manager, and Larry McPhail got brought on in 1938 but didn't fire Burley Grimes, and he saw out the year, Burley Grimes did. They finished seventh in the National League, 69-80. Babe Ruth in the second half was a coach, first base coach, and clashed a little bit with Leo DeRocher, who eventually ended up becoming the manager. And Babe Ruth's managing career kind of never actually came to fruition because nobody wanted to give him a chance. This year you had people like Babe Phelps as the catcher, Dolph Camilli as first base, Johnny Hudson, second base, Leo DeRocher, shortstop, Cookie Lavaghetto, who would become very famous later on in the Brooklyn Dodger history lore, Buddy Hassan in the outfield, Ernie Coy, and Goody Rosen. People like Orris Hockett, Gibby Brack, Tom Winsett. I love these names, guys. Their counterparts in New York National League Baseball history, the New York Giants. I'm guessing they did not finish behind, for sure.
They finished third that year, 83-67.
There you go.
A year after, you know, losing in the World Series in 37.
With Bill Terry still the manager.
Yes, sir.
You had Harry Diamond, Johnny McCarthy, Alex Camporis, second baseman he was, Dick Bartel at shortstop, Mel Ott at third base, the great Mel Ott, one of the greatest players of all time, Jimmy Ripple, JoJo Moore, and Hank Lieber round out the outfield. That's quite entertaining. I always like the name Wally Burger, who was a Dodger a couple years before here. And, of course, you can't talk about the 1938 New York Giants without mentioning the great Carl Hubbell, who batted 155 that year. He was a pitcher, by the way.
And
one of the greatest of all.
Yeah, and I think the story is that he struck out the American League, struck out the side in the All-Star game. And I think it was Ruth and, you know, all those big guys. I remember the story. They always talk about that, how he came in and struck out the side. Mm-hmm. And I believe that was one of the first wins by the National League in the All-Star game, 1938.
Go ahead, Mike. You probably have.
He struck out five in a row. That went into the next inning as well. Lou Gehrig, Ruth, I think Jimmy Fox were among the names he struck out, and two other very prominent figures that just can't, you know, make their way into my memory right now.
Nice. So 1938, so in summary then, the Dodgers weren't so good. They were pretty bad, and the Giants were competitive. And Carl Hubbell was a name that I think a lot of us have heard, and that certainly came up. Then we heard about a manager named Bill Terry, which tells us that if you have the name Terry and you're managing in New York, you're probably not so good. So,
well, hey, he did bring into some World Series, though, I guess, you know, more than Terry has so far.
Terry needs to walk out of that dugout now.
So part two of 38 would be Mets who have worn 38. So I've got my list here. I'll just rattle off one or two, and then I'll go around the horn for, you know, your thoughts on Mets who have worn.
The more Terry. You have another Terry in this list, by the way.
Yes. We certainly do have a Terry in this list, and we have a few others. So, being you know, one of the senior people on this podcast, I'm going to talk about some of the older guys. So where do I want to start here? Let's start with a guy named Rich Folkers. I remember him in the early 70s with the Mets, and what I remember about him most was he wore glasses. I mean, this guy wore gold-framed glasses on the mound. And I, you know, being a neophyte baseball fan at that point, I think he was one of the few players I had ever seen actually wear glasses on the field. So Rich Folkers jumps out to me for that. And then I'll go to Skip Lockwood. Skip Lockwood was the Mets closer in the mid to late 70s, when the team was good in the mid 70s and bad in the late 70s. But Skip Lockwood was a reliable closer. You know, he would come in. They didn't really track pitch speeds as much back then, but I would guess he was in the mid-90s. And he was an effective closer, not the best ever, but certainly effective. And one last one from me. I have to go to Rick Aguilera. And always liked Rick Aguilera. He had his best years, obviously, once he left the Mets as a closer with the Twins mostly. But with Aguilera, he threw that pitch to Dave Henderson in Game 6 of the World Series that Henderson hit out. And it looked for all the world like the Red Sox were about to become world champions. Henderson hit the home run in the 10th inning off of Aguilera. Aguilera then gives up another run in the inning. And I always thought about this. I always thought they showed Aguilera in the dugout with his head in his hands and essentially crying into a towel. What must he have felt when Ray Knight crossed the plate? Could you imagine this kid's career, the trajectory of his career? He would have gone – he could have been – the kid who was on the mound when the mighty Mets lost the World Series, and that seemed all but assured. And then with that miraculous rally in the bottom of the 10th inning, he was relieved of that, as if somebody took a boulder off his back. And I wonder if the psychological impact of that, of not having to carry that around, really made him, or was a contributing factor to making him the quality closer he was later in his career. I wonder about that, and I'm sorry to bring this up, but I think about Donnie Moore, who surrendered a home run. Surrendered a home run to Dave Henderson in the ALCS that year, and we all know he took his own life years later. And so you wonder about Rick Aguilera and how the Mets did him a solid by getting him off the hook in that game, and if they did not, would he have been the same pitcher? Anyway, food for thought. No way to know. Nobody knows what would have happened. And I'm done. So,
well, Rick Aguilera is in the Twins Hall of Fame.
Absolutely he is. Yes, he is. And very solid career once he left the Mets. And I want to say it would have been the same had that, you know, World Series gone south, but you never know. So, Sam, number 38, who are a couple of guys who jump out to you?
I think you always got to go to Roger Craig just because he was, he was a seasoned veteran who had success before the Mets and obviously didn't have that much success. But I believe he was the first pitcher. I think he was toed the mound. He was basically the ace for that team. Can anybody help me? Am I correct, Mike?
I'm sorry. Say that again.
For the 62 Mets, Roger Craig was the first pitcher on the mound that year, right?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Right. So I think Roger Craig definitely is, even if, you know, he generally lost, but it was at the tail end of his career, and then later he was manager of the Giants. I still think Roger Craig, and I always think the 62 Mets, and how, you know, you look at that team, they probably would have been a pretty good team if it assembled in 1956. So... You look down this list, Ralph Terry was the Terry, by the way. That's 8-11-1966, 5-11-1967. I also Bob Gibson wore it. I guess he was a coach. Is that the same Bob Gibson?
Yep, he was 87? Pitching coach. He was pitching
87?
Coach, yeah.
I thought he was pitching coach earlier, Torrey.
Yeah, it was under Torrey. That's not right. 87 is not right.
Right.
So I gotta look at it. Like, this might just be a Bob Gibson that appeared randomly in 87. Let's see. Come on. You can look. Anyway, I guess I'll leave that for loading purposes and go back to the list. Jay Sow is an interesting name to pop up. I mean, it's just one of those lists that's pretty, generally speaking, lackluster. Like, you know, one of those could-have-beens. You got Victor Zambrano, who's just this, you know, a big infamous memory of Mets lore. Carlos Muniz, randomly, you know, I think a prospect that didn't hit it up. Fernando Nieve, names I wish I didn't know. Chris Capuano, Garrett Olson, Sean Markham, Vic Black. And here's the thing. You notice how none of us noticed that Dan Worthen changed his number? That wasn't a thing at all? So, yeah. That's my 38.
Mike L.
Got to give it to Craig. Or Rick Aguilera. You got to give it to Craig or Rick Aguilera.
There you go.
Rich, I'm right there with you with Skip Lockwood. I was fond of him, really fond of him, as a matter of fact. He was a hard throw. We picked him up from the Angels. He served the team well, especially, you know, I always say, had Dave Kingman not broken his thumb in 76, the Mets could have challenged for the division flag that year. And Skip Lockwood would have been a big part of that. And then I also look at this list, and I see Victor Zambrano. Famously traded for someone, again, I should know off the tip of my tongue, and I'm suffering a brain cramp. Who was he, Rich?
He was traded for Scott Kazmir.
Exactly. And that sticks out. I mean, one of the more ludicrous trades this organization has ever pulled the trigger on. And then, I'll give a tip of the cap to Roger Craig. How could you not? And, you know, Rick Aguilera, it's funny the things that you brought up. Not funny with regards to Donnie Moore, of course not. But, you know, I was thinking Aaron Heilman should have been so lucky to have that taken off his shoulders by who hit that home run?
Yeah, right. Scotty
DeMolina, right?
Good point.
All right.
Nice. So, Long Island Mike, number 38. Do you have the list? Do any of these guys, either guys you've heard of who are not from your era, or guys from your era? Any comments?
Yeah, six words. Whatever happened to Vic Black?
Great. You know, I
question.
Googled him.
That's a good question.
Not to interrupt, I Googled him about a week ago because I thought about him. Something came up, and he's out of baseball. He's not in the minor leagues. He's out of baseball. And you wonder why. I mean, the guy threw in the mid-90s. I thought he was pretty damn good. I know he had an injury at some point in there, but, nobody has him. He's unemployed.
Wow.
I think MLB Network or, ESPN should pick him up because I think he's a pretty good personality.
We have time for questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
What do you think about the Mets trade for Jay Bruce? Do you think it was a good deal?
I think it's going to be better next year.
You've been trading Wade Gilson Herrera. You're not mad about that?
I personally am a little perturbed. I was a fan of the kid. I thought he was going to be really good. So, but at the same time, you know, I see what Sandy was talking about when talking about the plethora of depth at second base. I mean, you could even, like, you know, worst case scenario. I mean, they're talking about putting Jose Reyes at second base next year, which is hysterical. We're coming all the way back around to this.
Yeah, I know.
Where's Kaz Matsui?
Yep.
Yeah, really?
One more statement. Mets should sign Tim Tebow.
No.
No.
I'd rather sign Michael Jordan right now.
So, guys, good stuff on number 38. Now, we have 5 minutes and 7 seconds left. And in that time, I'd like to close it. Instead of doing a traditional last word, let's do a last Blog Talk Radio thought. 138 episodes in, 3.5 years worth podcasts. Does anybody want to share a memory on Blog Talk Radio of a great podcast, a great thing we did, or something funny or anything like that? So, Sam, I think it's only right to go to you first. So what do you think? Anything you want to share about memories of being on Blog Talk Radio?
Well, I got to go right to the day that Johannes Cestus was signed. I mean, I don't think we've ever had more fun on the podcast than we did that day for everybody who was able to join us that day. You know, there were some fun times just talking about how bad the Mets were while we were watching them. You know, 2013, I remember we were really, really stoked for there to be some actual little bit of pop in the catcher's position. You know, it's been a fun ride. It's nice been having people like Greg Prince on, Ted Bird, John Coppinger, Taryn Cooper, the Coop. You know, we've just had some great people on here, and sorry if I don't mention everybody. You know, I'm just really proud of what we've built here, and I can't wait to continue onward and upward and building, you know, even more listeners and more of a guest network and all the likes over on SoundCloud and the SND podcast channel.
Great. Mike, your thoughts?
I'd like to toss another tip of the cap out there to Mr. Gary Mack, another fine guest of the show over the years.
Of course.
You know, we had a lot of fun while Sam, a lot of our podcasts, Sam was on location throughout the streets of New York City. And the background music of Manhattan and the streets of Brooklyn, you know, it's music to my ears, sirens, trucks, ambulances, they were all part of what we called a full-service podcast. We strayed, you know, we laughed, we joked, we ranted. Sometimes, you know, we were menstruating. Sometimes we were, you know, feeling better about things. But overall, I think we learned a lot. We learned what worked, what didn't. And now with that knowledge, let's take the next step forward and up our game and see if we can provide our listeners with a much better quality product.
Great. You know, and a thought from me would be, Sam, about a year and a half ago, spring training before the 2014 season, it's 2.5 years ago, excuse me, you had umpire Perry Barber on. Remember that?
I do. Perry's fantastic.
She was such a cool guest to have on. You had a female umpire who, you know, had worked minor league or was still working minor league games. She had that week worked a Mets intra-squad game and was telling us about, you know, some of the dynamics, what some of the players say and do and quirky things and stuff like that. So it was great to have her on, and I exchanged emails with her after that podcast. She, you know, she sent me some stuff, just reading material and stuff. So nice, nice lady. I remember having her on. You know, you've mentioned some of the guests that we've had, you know, between Metrodamus, John Coppinger. We've had Greg Prince on many, many times, and Steve Keen, formerly of the Crane Pool Society, has joined us a few times.
Of course. Yes, sir.
And you know, we've had shows where we've had a lot of callers. We've had shows where we've had our loyal caller, who is on the line with us now.
We definitely have to give a shout out to the NYM News for Jaron for joining us and giving us a very unique side of the callership.
Yeah, that night I remember I couldn't get in. As a staff writer, I was trying to get in, and you guys, the lines were jammed because of his following that he was on. And so that was, I remember that one. We did some of these, you know, you guys, I've never joined the ones that you've done at midnight, but you guys have done some of those. We did them during the postseason run last year. I know one time, Sam, you and I did one. I was at spring training and we did one, and a lot of fun, you know. a lot of fun on the Rising Alpha Report on Blog Talk Radio. And now we're going to be migrating, I'll say it one last time, to the SNDP podcast channel of SoundCloud. We're migrating over there. We will, of course, advertise on the site when our first podcast will be there and what the call-in number will be and all of that. And before saying goodnight to my staff writers, my fellow staff writers, want to say goodnight to Long Island Mike. And, you know, we joke with you a lot and, you know, you come on and it's great. You know, your perspectives are unique for sure and we have fun with it, but that's what makes you you. We appreciate you calling us and talking baseball with us and hope you'll join us over on SoundCloud.
I will.
Sounds good. And so with that, any final last words, just last words, why don't we go to Mike first and have Sam wrap it up?
Well, what better way to wrap up this last episode with one last final word and plea to the Mets to memorialize Mrs. Joan Payson at Citi Field. Besides that, I'm tired, man. Like you said, I was fresh off a flight. I need some sleep. So please, come on, memorialize Mrs. Joan Payson at Citi Field. It's long overdue. No her, no Mets.
Amen. Sam, why don't you, I want you to be the last voice. I want you to say goodnight. I'm not going to say anything. I want you to be the last voice on this one. Go.
Well, then, Rich, you got to give your last word then first, and then I'll take over.
All right. My last word is hope. I didn't have much until the last two wins in San Francisco. I have some now. Don't let me down, Mets. That's mine.
And thank you guys for, you know, just being the part of the show that you guys have been. It's just been quite the ride, and I can't wait to take it forward. So, I think with the Mets, I think what we have to realize is that I love the fact that we are in this position. You know, we're very disappointed that it's come to this at this particular point, but we haven't been at this particular point this far into the season that often. And one way or the other, this is a very interesting season for the next chapter of New York Mets history. And one way or the other, these are going to be really, really, you know, fun games over the next month and a half, even if it doesn't end up the way we want it to. And you know, they keep frustrating us in similar fashion to the way they've frustrated us so far. I just think we have to sit back and remember that we love this team. And one way or the other, outside of like some of the boneheadedness that we continue to see from the entire franchise, i.e. things Mike was just talking about, it's still our team. And unfortunately, some of that boneheadedness kind of plays into the general narrative and identity that this team has taken. Of always just being ever so close but can't get over the hump, and it's unfortunate Wilpons play into that, but it just is what it is, and it's almost weirdly, morbidly endearing sometimes when you think about it. It's so very human, and it's such an unbelievable human tale, and that's one of the big reasons why I love being a Mets fan. And unfortunately, we've fallen back into the idea that, you know, we're, this 2016 team is going to have to perform some miracles to get back to the position that they hope they'd be from last year. So there's going to be a lot of baseball left to be played, and there's going to be a lot of different things that we're going to see. I mean, we didn't think we'd see Bartolo Colon hit a home run, but we saw it. So you never know about these 2016 New York Mets. So, without further ado, everybody, thank you for joining us on Blog Talk Radio. The 138th edition is wrapped up, and there's only one more thing to say on this podcast. Let's go, Mets.